We have thrown the pro-business Republicans out of office and replaced them with pro-environment Democrats. This leads one to ask, can we have a clean environment and do business?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 526th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Portofino who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hello there.
And producer Kelsey Olson on the stories. Hello, Kelsey.
Good morning, Dad.
I have a great, big, giant, colossal, monumental size irony for you to consider today. We have here in the United States one of the cleanest landscapes in the world. Yes, I know that Los Angeles can be a little dirty once in a while, and parts of New Jersey can be downright caustic sometimes, but by and large, the U.S. of A. is one clean place, especially considering the 300 million people who live here. The U.S. is clean because we want it to be clean and pass many laws and enforce many regulations to make certain that our desire for a clean environment is enforced. Now for the irony. Get ready. The United States is now so clean that it must purchase many of its manufactured goods and foods from one of the dirtiest places on earth. And that, of course, would be China. In fact, the United States is now buying so much from China and selling so little back that one of the dirtiest countries on earth may one day soon own one of the cleanest countries on earth, lock, stock, and barrel. And thus the irony. This leads one to ask, can we have a clean environment and do business at the same time? Here to help us explore this question today, we have John Berlaw, who is the author of EcoFreaks and the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship. John, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Michael.
So you're the author of EcoFreaks. Let me guess which side this you're on this question of environmentalism.
I try to show, Michael, I'm on the side of public health, but a lot of times environmentalism is the solutions proposed by environmentalists have worked against public health. I consider myself a conservationist, but not an environmentalist as far as the sometimes the ecosystem concept can lead you to overlook the things in the ecosystem.
Well, John, you make some incredible assertions in the in your book, EcoFreaks, about some of the great accomplishments of environmentalism, or at least one would think they would be great accomplishments. Let's take a couple of them and look at them before we get into the notion of environmentalism and business. And let's start with DDT, a great victory, was it not, that we eliminated DDT from the environment?
Well, it has not been such a great victory for those dying of malaria in Africa, 2 million a year, and that's why everyone from the New York Times editorial page to even Archbishop Desmond Tutu, one of the great warriors against the apartheid system in South Africa, have called, and now the World Health Organization is calling for a limited use of DDT there, because it's the only thing that can bring down malaria there, they say, as it did in much of the world, including the United States. The National Academy of Sciences is credited with saving 500 million lives, and the wildlife effects were overblown, but it's never been shown to be harmful to humans.
Okay, what about the birds? What about the birds? What about Silent Spring and all of that?
I think if you read EcoFreaks, you can see where Silent Spring, where Rachel Carson made a lot of assertions. Some things weren't known, but even assertions about DDT's origin, supposedly coming from poison gas, it was at the time not true. It was developed to protect actually the troops from typhus and malaria in World War II. And anything can be overused, but some of the things as far as the birds, when they would give, say, robins, when they would feed robins DDT, it didn't have that effect. They would secrete the DDT in their way. So and a lot of and birds, of course, now have been, you know, California condors and peregrine falcons in Virginia, where I live, have been dying of West Nile. So maybe it raises the question: maybe we need pesticides to save the birds in Australia.
Now that would be an irony, would it not, if we brought back DDT to save the birds?
It would be, but there are a lot of ironic things in the.
John, another incident in Eco Freaks, you talk about asbestos. Now, wasn't it a smart thing to do to get rid of asbestos?
Well, it's funny because we're talking about natural versus artificial. Asbestos is something that's perfectly natural. It's in the state rock there in California, the serpentine. At high doses, yes, it was shown to be very harmful to workers. And I mean, that was certainly a call for precautions. But it was also one of the most fire-resistant materials ever made, according to experts like Rachel Maines at Cornell University. You used to have fires in theaters. That's where you got the saying "fire in a crowded theater" about free speech. Used to be very common. One in Chicago killed about 600 people. When the curtains would ignite, you put asbestos curtains in there, and those types of fires disappeared. And in the nightclub in Rhode Island where the firework was let off, Dr. Maines had Cordell said if they had had an asbestos ceiling like would have been in nightclubs 30 years ago, the fireworks would have just bounced off and come right back down. Probably never would have heard of the nightclub. So that's why you need to balance risk.
There's a definite trade-off here with respect to the things that we do to protect our environment.
Yes.
Well, John Berlaw, you're also the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship.
Yes.
And, you know, when I saw that you wrote this book, Eco Freaks, and I saw that you were director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship, I got to thinking about the relationship of environmentalism and ability to do business. And daily we almost are confronted with the fact that our balance of trade with other nations is growing to an extraordinary sum. And we seem to be exporting our ability to manufacture goods and grow crops to other countries. What effect does environmentalism have on our ability to grow crops and manufacture goods and to be entrepreneurs?
I think it has a lot, and I think the fact that every business, including Walmart, says that they're green now, is reason to have a debate about environmentalism because
we all know where Walmart gets its stuff to sell.
Yes, and should you really penalize a small farmer for using an herbicide or a pesticide if it's shown to be safe and it could help that farmer grow his or her crops?
Well, does environmentalism have an impact on our ability to grow crops? Do you think it does? I mean, as a director of a Center for Entrepreneurship, what impact does environmentalism have on our ability to do business?
With pesticides, first of all, I mean, as I said, it could demonize a small farmer trying to hold down costs who thinks, you know, an herbicide or a pesticide might be useful. In the larger scheme, it's going to be hard to feed everyone. Norman Borlaug, the Nobel Prize winner and a creator of what was called the Green Revolution, said this: we have a system where pesticides and high yield farming have enabled you to grow crops in smaller spaces and to leave more room for forests and wildlife and more room for trees. And that, I think, if pesticides are totally demonized, that could have an effect there, as Dr. Borlaug has said.
But it's not just when we think of environmentalism, we're not thinking of just pesticides. We're also thinking of air quality, of water quality. And, you know, we're so stringent about these things now that there are places in California where you can't smoke a cigarette on the beach. So those laws, what impact do those laws have on our ability to do business?
I mean, I think they have certainly when I mentioned before the asbestos. I mean, it's caused a lot of companies to go bankrupt with the lawsuits and laws and even companies related to that. I know with the smoking ban in D.C., restaurants that just took effect. Restaurants and bars are worried. And you know, the thing is, health is wealth in a way. And if you reduce national wealth, you reduce the ability both for a society to come up with cleaning up the air, and also as far as individuals to go to the doctor. So we do really have to be worried about that. I mean, regulatory costs have been shown to be in the billions of dollars. My colleague Wayne Bruce says the 10,000 commandments and the number of times.
That's exactly what I want to get to, and we're going to take a quick break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with John Berlaw, who is the author of Eco Freaks, also the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship. The question we're working with today is, can we do business and have a clean environment at the same time? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phones and join us today. We will be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're talking about a big irony that we all must live with, and that irony is as follows. We here in the United States have one of the cleanest countries in the world. Yeah, it's a little dirty here and there, but by and large, if you travel around the world any, you know that we do have one of the cleanest places on Earth. And we enforce that cleanliness with many laws and regulations, because we want to protect our environment and we want to live in a clean place. But to do that, we've been forced to buy many of our goods and services and many of our foods now from other parts of the world that aren't so clean. So, in effect, we're kind of exporting our dirtiness to other parts of the world. And we're doing it to the extent now that we're almost going to be owned by those other parts of the world, because we're buying so much more from them than we're selling them. And that results in debt. So the question that we ask today is, can we do business and have a clean environment at the same time? Or are we going to be forced to live at the situation where we, in effect, are going to be owned by China? What do you think? The phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We've got John Berlaw with us, who is the author of Eco Freaks and the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship. John, we're talking a little bit about the impact of laws and regulations on entrepreneurship. As a director of the Center for Entrepreneurship, what is the about America, about the United States, that has made us the land of entrepreneurs?
I think it's steeped in history from the founding fathers, folks like Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone, and just all of the immigrants who wanted to come here for a better life that we've imagined. We could build, I talk about in with asbestos how we built steamboats, schools, everything for theaters, everything, to bring what had been a privilege of the wealthy to the ordinary Americans. And it's always a yearning from somebody who starts an eBay business and thinks they can become the next Bill Gates. And I'm worried about both in this area, the environmental area, and others, such as all of the new accounting and mandates, Sarbanes-Oxley, that came as a result of the Enron abuses, that will frustrate, say, the next Bill Gates, the next Meg Whitman of eBay, as well as, farmers, small businessmen, everyone.
Well, not to put an answer in your mouth, but hasn't the wide open spaces of the United States really been the breeding ground for our entrepreneurship? You know, those wide open spaces, the room to move without bumping into people, the freedom to do things without hurting your neighbor. We've not been, you know, there's lots of room to grow. There's freedom. There's no, very few laws. There's not a class of people that own everything already. Isn't that wide open spaces of the United States? Isn't that the real breeding ground of entrepreneurship, the freedom to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, as I said, certainly the freedom to be an entrepreneur and, open space, but also the ingrained in the culture, and as I was saying before, some of the open space, the development of high yield farming means that there is more open space. So we've been able to create some of that. You know, there's a lot of reforestation, as I say in the book, going on. Some of the areas that former farmland and other things have been reforested. So you've got, like, in some of the New England states, actually more forests than there were 100 years ago. So all kinds of both as far as with the landscape and with products, there's been a lot of, you know, innovative folks who have thought about.
We've been able to do that because we've had the wide open spaces to do that, and it seems like we're losing those wide open spaces, either because we're populating the country to the extent that we no longer have it, or we're imposing, you know, these various laws and regulations on ourselves that, you know, preclude entrepreneurship. As we speak, we're now going in debt to the tune of $230 billion a year to China for stuff. China has no wide open spaces. China has nothing but people crowding shoulders to shoulder. Why are they able to do things to manufacture goods and grow crops where we are not?
Why are
Why is China able to manufacture things where we are not? Can't we make our own toothbrushes anymore?
As you've as you said, I mean, some things. I mean, we don't want to. You know, there are some things that, I mean, we're just. Naturally, it would seem to be better. I mean, we could, you know, grow coffee beans in America, but we'd have to have hot houses. So it sort of makes more sense for Brazil too. But yes, I think a lot of it has to do with less regulation there. And of course, China, they do have, like, a lack of system of property rights and things like that. So
does China have fewer regulations than we do? Fewer laws pertaining to the environment? I mean, If you were to look at China, it's not a very clean place. So,
right.
Are they not concerned about what happens with their environment?
Well, you know, it's funny, Michael. I mean, the Soviet Union, when it opened up in the 90s, it turned out to be a very dirty place, and they had put on, you know, they had stressed production over everything else, a command and control economy. And China, even though they have some market system, is sort of like that. So in a way, yeah, the government, you know, is encouraging, subsidizing manufacturing, subsidizing the goods in both of those countries. So it is, and they don't have, you know, individuals participating in that. So yes, I mean, I talk about in Eco Freaks, which is Eco-Freaks. One of the things we should be worried about is that China and India, or state-owned companies in China, are the only countries making DDT, and there might be a time, I mean, with a bird flu or a bioterror agent here that could be spread by insects, and certainly, you know, in the malaria in other countries, where we might need DDT again, and we do have to worry about it being made in only a couple countries by mostly state-owned firms.
As a director of the Center for Entrepreneurship, who will have the greatest advantage here when it comes to the competition for the consumer dollar? Those who have the rules and regulations to contend with, or those who have the freedom to who do not have the rules and regulations to contend with, rules about the pesticides and about the air quality, about how are we going, when we get back from the break, I want to ask you, as a director of the Center for Entrepreneurship, how are we going to compete with countries that have no laws, no regulations about how badly you can pollute the environment and still manufacture goods? Folks, this is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Today we're talking with John Berlaw, who is the author of Eco Freaks and the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute Center for Entrepreneurship. We're talking about the impact of environmentalism on our ability to do business. Can we have a clean environment and a successful industrial base at the same time? Or must we export our dirtiness to other countries like China and Mexico and grow things there and produce things there because it's too dirty to do it here? And what does that mean for our ability to survive? Curious to know what you think. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned. Hey, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with John Berlaw, who is the author of Eco Freaks, also the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship. And we're talking about the impact environmentalism has had on business. And we recognize the fact that we now live in one of the cleanest countries in the world. But we also recognize the other fact that the cleanest country in the world is relying on some of the dirtiest countries in the world to manufacture their goods and grow a lot of their foods. So we pause to ask today, can we have a clean environment and still do business? Or must we have a clean environment and come to rely on China to manufacture everything for us, in which case we will sooner or later be owned by China? What do you think? Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. John Berlaw is the director of the Center for Entrepreneurship. I'd like to ask you, what percentage do you think of the reason we have moved our manufacturing base to China can be laid at the feet of the environmental movement? What percentage of that need to go offshore was caused by the rules and regulations of environmentalism? Got any idea?
I certainly think probably a significant portion, and some of it you were asking before. I mean, I think we certainly can protect public health and still have a good economy. The question is excessive regulation, and also on China, we need to make sure treaties like Kyoto, which I have other criticisms of as far as restricting energy use. I mean, apply to every country. There were a lot of exemptions for China
China was nor India were signatories to the Kyoto protocols, were they?
Yes, yeah, you're right, and that's why 95 members of the Senate, I mean Republican and Democrat, all voted for a motion saying that, to reject the Kyoto Protocol. It wasn't, and people are
so essentially we said that we're not going to comply because China and India do not have to comply. So what difference does it make if we're clean and we're essentially exporting our dirtiness to them, are we not?
Oh, you certainly had that concern, and that was a bipartisan concern that yes, if all countries are not complying, the U.S. shouldn't bear the burden. I think it would be burden for every country, and I think would have if we have these sharp restrictions on energy use that estimates have shown. I mean, Department of Energy estimates show Kyoto could cost $100 billion. I mean, it would hurt every country as well as energy for use for hospitals. But certainly, you know, if there are restrictions, it should be shared, and not the burden should be put disproportionately on the U.S. or some other country.
Well, let me ask you this, John Berlaw, as the director of the Center for entrepreneurship. How can we be entrepreneurs and compete with a country like China, given their apparent lack of concern for the environment, given their apparent lack of concern for keeping things clean? They don't have to worry about all of those things that we have to worry about and we have to contend with and we have to comply with. So,
well, we can compete by protecting public health because, you know, Bangladesh isn't leading the world either, but also reviewing regulations and seeing if they make sense, seeing if they are based on science, and seeing if there could be a better way, like with, you know, at the state or local level or with property rights to solve some of these issues. With asbestos, the lawsuits have cost $100 to $2 billion, and that, I mean, affects American consumers, other businesses. I mean, the money has to come from somewhere. And there have been studies reported on in magazines such as the New Yorker, where 85% of, you know, the people collecting it didn't have diseases such as mesothelioma, and even the people who did face high exposure, most of the money went to the trial lawyers, who are pretty wealthy. Some of them are pretty wealthy in themselves.
So, given that fact, China has no attorneys, do they? China
maybe
has no tort.
That's the secret. Maybe you hit on something.
China has no tort law. So, the question is, again, you know, we want to have a clean environment. We need to have a clean environment for our future. But we also have to do business to stay alive as well. We have to make earn a living, and so we ask, can we earn a living and still have a clean environment in this world where we have to compete with some very dirty countries? We're going to go to the studio audience now, ask some questions. Folks, you're invited to participate. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. The phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Question of the day is, can we do business and have a clean environment and still compete with the dirty countries of the world like China? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. We've got Mary in the audience today. Mary, what do you think? Can we compete and have a clean environment?
Michael, I think this is a question of global perspective. It's also right here at home in terms of one side of our brain having the right idea, a clean environment, a healthy environment, but the other side of our brain hasn't caught up. We still want all of that stuff, and we want it cheap. And so we want it both ways. And we've got a big conflict in this country because we have that perspective, and many of us can't get to the other side, which is, we don't need all of that stuff. We don't need the energy, or we're going to invent a different form of energy to have a cleaner environment. All of those things need to happen, and none of it's catching up with us fast enough. And that's why we're finding ourselves with a tremendous trade deficit. And it's not going to change.
Because we can buy expensive, cheap things from China.
Exactly. All of those plastic, fantastic things.
Is it going to change?
I don't see it changing fast enough. And
we're going to be owned by China.
I think we already are. The truth is that we're finding much of that industrial grime and dirt finding its way into our ecosystem. So while we think that we are clean, it's true, we are sending everything over to be done in countries like China, but it's finding its way back through the stratosphere right into our own backyard again.
Our problem is that we sent everything upstream to be manufactured, and the effluent flows downstream or across the Pacific on the trade winds to us, and thus...
Yeah, everything rolls downhill.
Yeah. Okay, folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're going to go to Rebecca when we come back, and we have John Berlaw, who is the author of EcoFreaks, the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Entrepreneurship, and we have you. Phone number is 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phones and join us. Do you think we can compete, do business, and have a clean environment? If so, how? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. 479-1080. Right back. Well, what do you think out there? Can we do business and have a clean environment and compete with China? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. John Berlaw.
Yes.
Director of the Center for Entrepreneurship. Can we?
Well, I think we can. I think we can protect public health and do business. And one of the things I talk about, Michael, in EcoFreaks is that frequently the American environmental movement has actually been roadblocking clean energy solutions such as hydroelectric power from dams, which is used greatly in Canada and in Europe, and they're trying to build some in the third world. But here they're talking, I mean, not even about building new dams, you know, which is, you know, no pollution, no carbon dioxide. Not that there aren't issues with construction, but there are issues with that, you know, with every source of energy, with, you know, polysilicon extracted for solar even. But the, you know, falling water, I mean, no pollution, no carbon dioxide, yet because it's somehow unnatural, because somehow you're changing the river flow, American environmentalists are have been, you know, sort of dead set against not only new dams, but talking about breaching some of the dams we have to provide power in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, here in California, too.
What'd you say?
Here in California, too, they're talking about breaching the Hetch Hetchy Dam up in the Sierras. They're deconstructing dams.
I mean, that's interesting. And you've even got, you know, Democrats such as Dianne Feinstein who have, you know, come out against the Sierra Club on that. So it's interesting to see how Democrats will handle some of these issues.
Well, as an entrepreneur, as a director of the Center for Entrepreneurship, how do you compete with somebody like China? I mean, what is the secret? How are we going to do it?
I think the secret to China and everyone, as far as, you know, making it so that entrepreneurs can achieve the American dream and also that consumers will have a wide variety of affordable products to choose from, is to just to look at regulations, to actually look at the science, and, you know, look at protecting, you know, look at what does really affect people.
But we can look at those things, but they're not looking at those things. They don't care about those things at all. They don't care about anything other than getting the buck.
Right.
And they're doing it to the extent that we're going in the hole $230 billion a year.
That could improve in some sense when their standard of living, there's a saying, wealthier.
Do you know how many people we have to lift up before that happens?
It would be quite a few. I think there are issues with other countries' political systems too. But the thing is, we
essentially we have to give up our wealth to raise China to a point that's equal to us or something like that before we can compete. Is that what I mean?
I don't think that's necessarily so. And I mean the goods. I mean the goods having those goods there, you know, are helping to an extent. I mean, having, you know, just not only from China, but affordable goods. If they're from other countries, we can build and make, you know, other things and develop software. But also, I mean, we, you know, Bangladesh and things like that. There was a saying. I think even Al Gore may have said that. You know, and I don't often agree with him. You know, if everything went to the countries with the lower standards ruled the world, I mean, Bangladesh would be on top. So I think you can protect public health and have economic growth. It's a question of balance. It's a question of actually looking at the science and looking at, you know, which is the greater risk, and not going overboard on things like asbestos or some herbicides. They're not saying, you know, everything that, you know, natural is necessarily good, and artificial, of course, is necessarily bad. That man is not necessarily everything. He or she does is not necessarily bad.
Well, let's go to our studio audience. Rebecca, you're a college senior. The future is yours. Are we going to be able to compete with China and have a clean environment?
Well, I'm actually going to respond to your question with a question, which is, I'm concerned about the intersection of the environmental and labor concerns. One of the reasons for moving production overseas is not only environmental, but looking for a workforce that will work at lower wages. And, you know, in involving the environment in that question, a workforce that is more comfortable living in places that are dirty, as you were talking about, mm-hmm. the you know, exporting
dirty. Our filth. Yeah.
And I'm wondering what will happen in the future when the workforce, as it's already begun to do in places like India, is starting to demand higher wages as the economy of the country develops. Mm-hmm. What happens then? Is that when America moves its production to another place after that? That's a concern.
Or back home, or if our labor becomes the equal of their labor, can we finally compete? Is that what it's going to take?
That's a concern.
So we make 3 won a day. Well, let's go to the phones right now. We have Richard. Let's go to Richard. Richard, welcome to the Food Chain. You're talking with Michael Olson, John Berlaw. Go ahead.
Hi, Richard.
Hello. Yeah, I think we're exporting our pollution.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, when it's all said and done, and everybody wants to collect on their investment, the Chinese, the English, and everybody that owns this country, and we decide to file bankruptcy, what are they going to do about it then?
From what I understand, they're cashing in their dollars right now and converting them to euros and gold.
What good does that do them?
Well, they have something that's not dollars, I guess.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just saying, you can't eat money. They come in here, even if the Arabs were to convert that money over to euro dollars, and we had to deal with the oil industry in euro dollars. If we decide to file bankruptcy, there's not much anybody can do about it.
Well, I guess you're right.
I mean,
except go bankrupt, right?
Well, yeah, what are they going to get? If they try to collect, you know, they're going to get, 10 cents on the dollar or something and a promissory note, and nothing really changes, does it?
Yeah, good point.
All right. That is a very good point. And sometimes I think concerns about the trade deficit can be overblown because, you know, that there isn't much they...
That's kind of like saying, if you owe the bank $1,000, the bank owns you. But if you owe the bank $1,000,000, you own the bank.
That's a very good saying.
Okay, folks, we're going to take one more quick break. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with John Berlaw. And you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Dave's up next. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, we're back. This is The Food Chain. Today we're talking about the impact environmentalism has on our ability to compete in the world marketplace. It seems as though we have one of the cleanest countries in the world, and yet we're exporting, we're importing all of our most of our manufactured goods from some of the dirtiest places on Earth, including China. So is it true that we're just exporting our dirtiness? And what impact is that having on our ability to do business here in the United States? We're talking with John Berlaw and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's go right to the phones and talk with Dave. Dave, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Dave.
Well, gentlemen, good morning. It can work. It has worked. the key to it all, as I see it, is that for years we had what's called tariffs, that if we manufactured something here that was cost $10 to make it here, and it could also be made in China or India for $4, if they wanted to sell it here, they paid a $6 tariff. And so,
which is kind of like a leveling of the playing field, as it were.
Exactly. It was not practical to move your company to these poor countries because you wouldn't gain anything.
But now we have the new world order of open borders and
exactly.
free trade.
The key to this is you've got to have in place a government that cares about the people, the working people, that cares about the environment, and that right now is just totally lacking.
John Berlaw, tariffs.
In general, although those would be better than quotas that would ban goods from coming into other countries. But in generally, I think free trade is good. I think it does bring cheaper goods, less expensive goods to consumers who may be saving for things like a college education, things like that. I think we do though have to evaluate. Our regulations to make sure, while at the same time we are protecting health, that they make sense and they're not an excessive burden on farmers, entrepreneurs, and the rest of business.
Well, it seems like what it boils right down to is that we're now going in debt to the tune of $230 billion a year to buy cheap goods. Am I reading this wrong?
I mean, can they? It's funny. I talk about going to trade a little bit in Eco Freaks, but the trades we've had trade surpluses during the Depression and trade deficits during good times. So I mean, it's always American competitiveness is always something to be worried about. Are we putting in too many burdens to American?
And that's what we're worried about today. John Berlaw, thank you so much for joining us on the Food Chain. Folks, see you next week for more What's Eating What Radio. Do stay tuned.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.